Today we have Mark Mero. Now, Mark was a four-time Golden Gloves boxer. He's had history where just major ups and downs, and today he's a motivational speaker.
Listen in as celebrities and amazing people share how they use their influence to change the world. Dive into their stories and discover their passion to keep living a legacy.
I saw this video a couple years ago, and I share it every time it comes up because it's so impactful. A story about your mom, which we're going to get into that. Today, we have Mark Mero. Now, Mark was a four-time Golden Gloves boxer. He's had a history where just major ups and downs. He was a professional wrestler, and today he's a motivational speaker, speaking to students, churches, anybody that will sit still and let him talk and just share his story. And it's such a powerful story that I was begging Neil, hey, can we get Mark? So our whole program is about living a legacy and using your influence to make an impact. And that's exactly what Mark's doing. So I am stoked. And Mark, welcome to the show, man.
Eric, Neil, thank you guys, man. I guess if I can just have you guys sit still for the next half hour, we're going to be in good shape then, right?
That's right.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So I have, I've shared that video, I can't say how many times. And honestly, I get emotional every time. You know, I watched it again yesterday, and I'd reached out to Neil maybe about a week ago, because, you know, Neil has the background in wrestling as well. And I said, man, I would love to get Mark. And he was like, well, I know Mark. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And it was like 24 hours. He's like, all right, Mark's booked. You know, we have interviewed famous celebrities and actors and singers and some of my all-time favorites. And I can't tell you, I don't think there's anybody I've been more excited to talk to than I am about today.
Well, thank Mark, you, Eric. I appreciate it. I want to give you the backstory of that video. It's real. Many of you know who Diamond Dallas Page is.
Yeah.
He's one of my closest friends. He's a guy I probably wrestled probably 200 times, you know. we battled in the WCW for years. And when I became an inspirational speaker, Dallas was also doing some speaking, so he wanted to come and stay with me in Orlando and go to a lot of my presentations. And he just became really, and he is such an inspiration, at Dallas. And of course, some of the videos he's done have gone viral. But anyways, when I went and stayed with him in Orlando, in Georgia, because I was doing schools in Georgia, DDP said to me, hey, bro, you mind if the guys come and film it? You never know, you know, maybe we can get a video together. I said, sure. And about a week later, he said to me that the guys came up with this 5-minute video. And he said, you mind if we put it up on YouTube? And he made a joke. He goes, hey, you never know. Maybe it'll go viral, you know?
Yeah.
And next thing I know, man, I don't know, maybe a week later, he says, man, that video, it's got like 200,000 views, you know? And it just started going more and more. Then people started sharing it. And one company that shared, it's called The Greek Kangaroo, they had 113 million views on it. It was incredible.
Wow.
So we sat there and started adding them up of different people that have shared the video. They have 200,000, 100,000, 50,000. It was over 500 million people saw that video in just a short time. And the funny thing is, when I go to schools or presentations, many kids, they weren't even born when I wrestled, but they know me from that video. So it's such a cool thing to walk out there and the kids kind of already feel like they know you and they can't wait to hear the story.
Yeah. Well, you know, I found out about it because of the Greek Kangaroo, and it doesn't say how many views it's had, but it does say that it had, I think it's 85,000 comments, 600,000 likes just on that specific video. But then you go to YouTube, and I know your particular page has 12 million views of the video. Diamond Dallas has 2.2 million. And I'm like, man, and those are just, you know, there's a dozens of others that have shared it that, like you said, 100,000 views here, 200,000. It makes such an impact. Because we can all relate to it, right? Whether it's the bully or the bullied, you know, it's just having that mom that wants to have that time. And we just kind of gave the Heisman. And then later realized, man, you know, she was in my corner the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, tell us more.
It's amazing. You know, there's no, I often say that there's no love greater than God's love than a mother's love. You know, mother's love is right underneath God's love. And, you know, we don't, sometimes we don't realize how much our moms or dads love us unconditionally, you know, no matter what I did or what I put my mom through. I mean, she adored me and she loved, well, all our my brothers and sisters, she loved us all. And I really put my mom through a lot of stuff, especially my drug addiction and just the way I would hurt her in a sense of letting her down or not becoming the man she always prayed or knew I would be, you know? Right. And that was what's so cool about this whole story was the person she prayed about or for and the person she always knew I could be, I finally became. Yeah. And even though maybe she didn't get to see that, you know, I know somehow she knows. And I make a joke about it that, you know, people have seen my video and have since passed on or, you know, and gone to heaven. And they've probably seen her and go, your son has been talking about you and doing great. So it makes just my heart just happy to know that she knows I'm really doing well.
Yeah. And she saw it the whole time, right?
Well, you know, she saw me go through a lot of heartache in life, you know, obviously. And the sad part is my mom was only 58 years old when she died. And wow. It was 2 weeks later that my 21-year-old brother died. And it was just like one heartache after another of going through so much, you know. And my little sister, she died at 21. My dad died while I was holding him in my arms. He died from cancer. And we lost so many family members, and it happened so quickly, you know. And, of course, in the wrestling industry, losing a lot of our friends in the wrestling industry yes. through, you know, drug overdose or suicide or whatever that would be, you know. Right. There was just many years of a lot of heartache. And
absolutely.
Questioning yourself and wondering, you know, going through depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. And who would ever think that that blessing or that turmoil that those valleys I went through in my life would be what exactly is helping me help other people now in my life.
And yeah. See, that's the thing. We have things happen to us, Mark, for a reason. And you see that reason now, all the struggle, all the challenges, even though you were reached the pinnacle in professional wrestling, you were not the person that you were chosen to be. It was a part of the journey and learning process so that you could help others later on from yourself. Yeah.
Through our struggles, we actually find our strength. You know, right. your current trial could be your future testimony. And even though, you know, and we still go through things. This isn't like it just stops and life gets perfect, you know. Right. It's like this past year has been one of the hardest years that I can ever remember. Not only did I lose 6 close friends and family members, I mean, died weeks apart, you know. But in March, We average between 230 and 250 events a year. I mean, this is like even more than when I was wrestling. It's just crazy the travel that we do presenting at schools. And on March 12th, I had a presentation in Georgia for the police department, and it was an evening event, and it was like the next day is when everything started shutting down. I mean, we knew it was coming. We didn't know how bad it would be, but it was like all the schools that were lined up, the churches, the corporations, everything we had was calling and canceling. And you start questioning yourself. You say, what happened? What are we going to do? I mean, I have my employees to take care of. I have our offices. I have so much that depends on these live presentations. And all of a sudden, it stops. And you get to the point where you just go, what is next? And that's where you have to reinvent yourself. Right. You know, and some people are going through some really hard times right now. And you know, I just turned 60 years old, and even I did this video about turning 60. And one of the things that people say is, "Well, are you going to retire?" I said, "Retire? No, I'm going to refire, man." And
that's
we started doing these virtual presentations, and we actually have one next week for the for a big county out in Georgia. That you know. It's not like being live, obviously. It's a little different, you know, but we get so many letters from students after these presentations on how you changed my life or how you inspired me or even how you saved my life. And oh my gosh, it makes everything you go through worthwhile to know that you can make a difference in someone's life. There's no greater joy.
Wow. There's not. So you just turned 60, so you're not quite old enough to run for senator. I heard at 61. I heard a rumor.
It's one of the jokes that I do make. But, you know, you never know. You know, one thing that we always say is never say never. You know, you never know what life can bring you, or you know, the people that you meet. I just believe things happen for a reason. You know, I don't know why this coronavirus happened. I mean, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I find that it's not so much about the circumstance or situation that we deal with. It's how we respond to it that makes all the difference.
That's exactly right.
You can get depressed. You can get anxiety. You can worry all day long. Watch the news. It drives you crazy, you know? Or you could just start having faith and start having hope and believing it's going to get better. Hey, guys, we've been through some tough things in this country. I mean, remember 9/11, what we all went through. We were like wondering, is more planes going to be attacking? What's going on? When it first happened, I mean, it was a scary time. Are we being attacked? And we got through that, you know, and the country came together. The only thing that really concerns me is not seeing our country come together the way it should during this dramatic pandemic that we're going through. And that's something that really concerns me. And that's why I want to bring hope to people. I want people to, you know, most of the worries we go through in life, they never happen, or they're never as bad as we imagine. We always go to the worst case scenario. You know, oh my gosh, what happens if this? What happens if this? You know, we go to worst case scenarios instead of just believing. Our minds are so powerful. I mean, I look at all the traumatic things I've been through in my life, and to make it to 60, to make it to this milestone, this this top of the mountain experience of getting here, you know, and I think about all the heartaches I went through, you know, and I'm here and I'm struggling and I'm fighting, but I will never give up, man, because I got to tell you something. Happiness is a choice in life. It really is. It's not a destination. It's a journey. You can choose it every day. I can think about all the bills I owe, or all the people that are hurting, or my own insecurities or whatever, and be miserable. Or I can make a choice and say, you know what? I'm going to look at my blessings. I'm healthy. I don't have a coronavirus. You know, there's people struggling that are on ventilators right now that don't know if they're going to be alive tomorrow. And here we are sharing with each other, man, talking about our families and things we're going through in life and encouraging each other. What a blessing we have right at this moment. Instead of thinking about the past or things we didn't accomplish or things that we fell short about, you know, we all have a past. You either run from it or you grow from it. And that's continue to grow.
And that challenge you talked about for your business, that's got to hit you harder than anything. Say, oh my gosh, when it happened and start hearing all these cancellations, what I can do next. And you talked about specifically going virtually. Have you made that shift enough into the virtual? Well,
we built a beautiful studio here in Maitland, Florida that we're utilizing for that. And, unfortunately, we had to lay off some people that work here, which is heartbreaking because, you know, they're family to me. You know, we don't have the finances coming in that when we were doing so many events all the time. I mean, it's just business. You know, you can't help it. You can't keep your doors open. But you know what? They have faith. I have faith. We're going to get back out there. We're doing these virtual presentations. I mean, right now schools are just starting to get back up and running. And the thing is, the schools can't even really schedule right now because they don't even know what's going on. They have no idea what days are available, if they're going to have school, if they're not going to have school. There's so many bigger things than just worrying about a virtual presentation right now. But when it will happen, and we'll be ready for it, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah. So question for you, right? People may have seen the video or not, but let's talk a little bit about your backstory because, you know, you do have a pretty wild backstory from being a boxer and then thinking that you're going to be in the Olympics, right? And then you had a nose injury that stopped that.
I was on the USA boxing team in 81, and 80, the Olympics were boycotted. So to have to go 3 more years and then wonder if you're even going to make the team or what's going to happen in life at that time. I mean, an injury took me out, but, so I decided to turn professional, and it was 2 weeks before my first professional fight that I had my nose shattered in an accident, needed reconstructive surgery. And my whole life was dedicated to sports. Ever since I could ever remember being a little kid, you know, hockey, football, lacrosse, boxing. I was always training. And when I had my nose shattered, I remember thinking that I got about a little less than a year off before I could really come back and start having full contact. And I just wanted to have fun. I just wanted to be a kid. I just wanted to go out with my friends thinking that was going to be fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, the drinking led to drugs. Drugs led to addiction. And I remember I would always say, I'm going to be back in 1 year and I'm going to be champ of the world, man.
Yeah.
1 year turned into two, two turned into four, four turned into 10 years of my life of drug addiction. And the only job I could get with my limited high school education was in construction, where I was building in-ground swimming pools. It was a horrible existence at that time. And it wasn't until I was 30 years old, I had a bunch of friends over my apartment, and my buddy was flipping through the TV channels, and he landed on professional wrestling. Sure. I said, whoa, stop it there. Let me see this. Mm-hmm. As I'm watching the TV, I got this aha moment, you know, that feeling where you go, and I just go, hey guys, I can do that. And my buddies were busting out laughing. I think like the Road Warriors were on or somebody. They go, look at the size of those guys, man. They'll pick you up over their head and throw you at the ring. They were laughing so hard, you know. But I always knew, I mean, I was always a good athlete, you know. Mm. So I found out where there was a wrestling school. I was living in Venice, Florida at that time. There was a wrestling school in Tampa. It was Malenko, Boris Malenko. His sons were Dean and Joe. Yeah. And they had a little wrestling school. And I would go there on weekends and then after work sometimes. And he taught me how to wrestle. And then I would drive up to – I'd drive about 7 hours to the TV tapings in Atlanta and hope to get picked on TV to be one of the guys that get beat up for $150, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it was at that point Dusty Rhodes saw me, and he said,
I was going to ask about Dusty because I'd read that there was a connection. Yeah.
Oh, my God. The American dream. He gave me the American dream. So anyways, I had my first match against it was against Doom, Butch Reed and Ron Simmons, you know,
with
another guy. It was a tag team match. And I kind of screwed up the match. And I was so green. I didn't even know what I was doing, you know. And after the match, Dusty called me into his office, and I thought, oh, man, I'm going to get chewed out for this, you know. And he just said, hey, kid, anybody ever tell you you look like Little Richard? And I thought he was talking about a wrestler, so I said, I don't know who Little Richard is. He goes, you know the singer, Wamp Bamba Lubaba, Wamp Bamba.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, no one's ever told me that. He goes, I think I got a gimmick for you. And that's how Johnny B. Badd was born.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I remember spending hours with Dusty Rhodes, and he'd show me how to walk and talk, and had the makeup artist put makeup on me. And next thing I know, I'm looking in the mirror, I go, damn, I look like Little Richard. You know, never even thinking of that guy or something. And real quick to jump to another quick story about that was just recently, I got an email from the guy who drove Little Richard. And he said to me, he goes, you know, because Little Richard passed a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And he said that Little Richard loved that gimmick. He said he would laugh. And it was so good to hear that, because I remember some of his concert. He would hold my poster and he'd tear it up. And he says, he thinks he's pretty. He's not as pretty as me. You know. So to hear that from this guy that drove him.
Yeah.
It really, really set well. It just made me really happy, you know, to know that he enjoyed that. So that was kind of cool. But anyways, getting back to the story. So that's when Dusty Rhodes gave me the character Johnny B. Badd.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stand wearing all that makeup. Dusty Rhodes had lipstick on, eyeliner, and all that rouge and stuff, you know, and I had my hair all pumped up.
Yeah.
And so every at the matches, I would often take off the lipstick and do less makeup, you know. And then there's a place called the gorilla position right before you go out to the audience, you know. And you'd have to wait the match that's going on. You'd wait there for your match.
Yeah.
Dusty would be up at the gorilla position. And he'd look at me and goes, go get some color on right now.
With that Cajun accent. Yeah.
Oh, he was so funny. But like I said, before the TV tapings, he would go to the ring with me. And he would do the walk and he'd do the talk and he'd show me how to be Johnny B. Badd.
Yeah.
And I remember laughing with him so hard, just had so much fun with him. And they're just memories that I'll cherish forever, because I often think, where would I be if I didn't meet Dusty Rhodes?
Yeah, right.
He didn't say, hey kid, anybody ever tell you look like Little Richard? Yeah, and that's where we start incorporating more and more the boxing gimmick, the tutti frutti. I'll kick your booty with my tutti frutti, you know. Yeah. It was a knockout punch. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun, a lot of good memories with the Dream.
Now, your childhood, you talk about being bullied at school and them calling you a bum because your mom would go, I think, thrift shopping and garage sales. So kids made fun of you. So you can relate a lot of ways to kids being bullied today.
You know, it comes full circle in my life. My parents got divorced when I was 8 years old, and my mom, we moved to one of the worst drug and gang infested neighborhoods on the west side of Buffalo, New York. And we were the minority in school. We were getting beat up a lot, and it was just a tough time in our lives. And I remember just that feeling of being picked on, and my mom would buy most of our clothes like at garage sales, you know, and that used to be the most embarrassing thing is, you know, mom would take us and drag us along to a garage sale and you know, if some cost a nickel, she'd say, well, I'll give you 2 cents for it or something. Like, oh my gosh, mom, just so embarrassing. And then going to school, and I remember being in class and a student recognized I was wearing something that was bought at their garage sale, and it was so embarrassing. Everybody would mock me, and I could so relate to kids today who get picked on. And just it brings back those memories of my life, you know, of being picked on or being bullied when I was a little boy, and that's why I got such a heart for these kids today, and such compassion and empathy for anybody that's been hurt or picked on in their life. One quick story was, you know, I always liked sports, and I wanted to play hockey, but I didn't know how to skate. And so they had tryouts for the hockey league. Well, the thing I didn't realize was everybody kind of makes the team, you know, type thing, you know. Well, I shouldn't say that. Not everybody makes it. I couldn't skate. So what happened was they stuck me in goalie.
Okay.
But what in practice, the kids would, the other players would come by from behind, hit me in the back of the skates, and I'd fall down because I couldn't hold my balance, and mocked me and laughed at me. And every day after practice, I'd go home. And my brother Joel, who was only 2 years younger than me, I'd ask him to shoot shots on me in the goalie net so I could keep practicing, get better and better. I ended up being our team was one of the top teams in the league. Out of 20 games, I had 13 shutouts. So here we are at the end of the year banquet for all the teams. All the teams in the league had to go to this banquet. They had all these trophies up on this big table. And the biggest trophy was the MVP for the entire league. Not each team got an MVP, but they had an MVP for the best player in the whole league, you know. So all the trophies are given away, and there's that one big trophy left. And they said, this year's 1972-73 most valuable player is Mark Mero. And I remember just – I mean, I felt like I was going to faint because I had to walk by all the kids that laughed at me, that mocked me, that knocked me down. And I went and picked up that trophy. And to this day, I still have that trophy. And it's the only trophy I have out of all the trophies for boxing and football. It's the only one I ever kept. And I still have it to this day. And it's like, I'll never get rid of it because it'll always remind me.
Yeah.
Never give up on your dreams and goals. You're not defined by other people's opinion.
Well, there's those days in your life where you begin to believe, right? You either begin to believe what everybody says about you, that you're a failure and a fraud and a bum. But there's the days in your life where you begin to believe, you know, for me, it was my Aunt Carolyn who always just built me up. And, you know, she encouraged me and just loved on me. And it was always positive, kind of like when you talk about your mom, right?
Isn't it funny how you said it? Yeah. Isn't it funny how you said you had someone that believed in you, you know, and that's what's so important is that when you could, when you believe in someone, they slowly start believing in themselves, and you watch that turn happen, you know, and they have that confidence, and you see that just that joy come through them. And I know your aunt gave that to you, and what a blessing that is to share.
Yeah. Now, we've got a lot in common, which is why I was so just impacted. Everywhere I turn as I'm watching your story. But one of the things that we've got in common is just God's grace in our life. Amen. Right? And I see what God's done in your life, and I see the impact, right? And the impact that you're able to have with others. So I would love to hear from you about kind of when your life changed, some of the monumental things in your life, kind of like that trophy, that have really kind of been milestones?
Well, you know, first of all, it was accepting Christ as my Lord and Savior really changed my life. Don't get me wrong, my life's not perfect, but knowing that I have that as my, you know, I often say that when you're at the end of the rope, the only one there is Jesus. So I've been there many times, and I really believe he kept me here for a reason, through three drug overdoses that I should have been dead. I really should have been. It's amazing that I somehow survived those overdose, and now living into my 60s, and it's been it's 17 years since I've been clean from drugs, which is amazing to go almost like just cold turkey of never doing it again. And it's like the one thing I realized that would kill me if I ever went back to it. And so I can share that part of my life. But, you know, in schools, we can't talk about God. You know, unfortunately, you can't even say the word God anymore. But, you know, when a student reaches out to me and they come into my world, I can say whatever I want, or you know, and I always tell them, you know, especially kids that are suicidal, and how much God loves them, and how he never would want them to hurt themselves, and neither would I. And it opens doors, you know, because kids don't always, you know, maybe their parents don't talk about God or never brought them to a church or something like that. And I don't beat nobody over the head with the Bible.
Right.
I think that's the biggest turnoff to some people is when you try to just preach like you're going to hell or this or that. I mean, that is like one of the worst things. You know, God loves everybody, you know, and the last thing he wants to see is people be afraid to reach out to him or something. So
yeah, I can beat myself up enough without you beating me up.
Exactly.
You know, I do a bit enough job. I don't need anybody else's help. But it is God's love that drew me, not the brimstone, but the fact of why would he love me, right? Why me?
You know, I often say that even though I can't say his name, every time before I go out there at a school and I go to some place, you know, I've been in front of 8,000 or 10,000 people at a time. You know, these big, they bus all the kids into an arena, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember just every time before I go out there, I always pray and just say, somehow, Lord, let them see your love and light shine through. And then after that presentation, we often get at least 100 messages from students on how it changed or saved their lives. And that video that went viral, I can't tell you how many people that I've got an email from or a letter from that said it saved their life.
That's right.
I, you know, guys, if I could read one of them that real quick, it's just beautiful. This little girl's name is Casey. She said, I had pills in one hand and a drink in the other. I had enough to end my life. I was ready to leave all because I didn't fit in. I felt unwanted, like I wasn't supposed to be around, like I was God's mistake. I looked on Facebook one last time and saw your video about your mom. I looked at your page, and with tears rolling down my face, I put the pills away and read your posts. This was 10 minutes ago. If it wasn't for that video, I'd be filled with pills on my way to see God. Thank you. So when you get something like that, it makes you realize how important it is. How important. We never know what someone else is going through in life. And we can all be a conduit to hope, to love, to compassion for other people.
Right.
And whatever, you know, who would ever think I'd make it to 60, but whether I make it 70, 80, or 120,
right. Yes.
I pray I could still be an encouragement to other people somehow, some way. And like I said, I'm not going to retire. I'm just going to refire.
Refire, yeah. I have a good friend that always says that. You know, we talk about influence and influencers and then living a legacy, right? Not just leaving a legacy, but we're living a legacy. So, you know, who would be, we've mentioned a couple of them, but who would be those key influences in your life, influencers? And then, and with that, what would the legacy that you would like to leave?
Great questions. Well, first and foremost, the biggest influence in my life is my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And the next big influence in my life was probably my boxing trainer, Ray Rinaldi. I mean, he took me when I was 16 years old, just a tough kid, and turned my life around. In my first year of boxing, I won the New York State Golden Gloves. I mean, first year, it was incredible. And the dedication he put into me and the belief he had in me, just like your aunt had in you, that when someone believes in you, man, you can just go.
You can do anything.
Yeah. The legacy that I hope and pray that I leave, it, it gosh, it won't be how much money I made or how big my house or nice my car was. It's going to be the difference I made in other people's lives. And that's what I really hope that someday someone grows up and says, man, I remember seeing that guy and he really changed my life. And there's no greater joy that I have in my life than knowing that I can make a difference.
Mark, as you know, our country struggled. What are your thoughts on how we can reunite, especially sports as they're coming back?
You know, guys, I really hope sports come back as sports and we just don't get so political that it just destroys everything we enjoy watching. You know, I hope they just play the game and not have to give us a speech on what they believe in or what they want to see happen, because it just gets to the point where
it divides.
We definitely need change. We definitely need you know, equal rights for everybody. But, man, we are starting to really hurt each other. There's becoming so much division, and I see it more and more. Because, remember, I'm around the kids.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want to see is young people growing up with anger or racism or bitterness. Yeah. Resentment. It's just sad. We want to preach love, man.
You're exactly right, because we're so focused on the division. You know, one of the things that, not completely alike, but similar is, so in 2015, my wife and I, our marriage just disintegrated. I mean, it just, the wheels came off. And I've read some of your story and I've been wildly intrigued, and we just didn't have time, but just your process of forgiveness through that was really just inspiring and encouraging, and the Lord just rebuilt Catherine and I. But I mean, she couldn't breathe without me being offended, and vice versa. I mean, it was just so toxic. And then every Sunday we're on stage singing and praising, you know, raising our hands, and 30 seconds before we're screaming at each other, and the kids are there and they're having to look the part. And, I mean, my son afterwards said, "I'm not a Christian. I don't want anything to do with it. You know, that's what it's about. I'm out." And it was just, it was devastating. I mean, it was devastating. Yeah. And fortunately the Lord's rebuilt. But, you know, one of the things that restored our marriage was a thing called Re-Engage. And it's hundreds of churches around the country and around the world. But, you know, some of the things we learned was, you know, you got to give the benefit of the doubt. You know, draw a circle around yourself and just focus on the only person inside that circle. Let them deal with themselves. Let the Lord deal with them. But give them the benefit of the doubt, rather than constantly assuming that they're wrong. You know, we get on Facebook as we're talking about the civil unrest. And I was talking to a buddy, a brother in Christ, who's, you know, of a different shade than I am. And he did a Facebook Live with another friend, and they were talking about the civil unrest. And I loved their perspective. And, you know, I just chewed on it for a while, because none of us really had an answer to how do we fix this issue of the civil unrest in our country. And it's like, it's not going to be fixed by the government. You know, I don't care who the president is or the Senate, that's not going to fix this. And it hit me. And I called Liddell and I said, "I've got the answer." He's like, "What is it?" I was like, "It's exactly what saved our marriage," because he went through the same thing. We both teach it, but it's just giving the benefit of the doubt, learning grace, not putting our hope in someone else, but in someone else, right? Up rather than out, and just realizing who we are and loving people, not expecting perfection. And it's like, you know, that's exactly what our country needs. And when I look around, you know, it's easy if you don't know someone that people become Facebook warriors and they're typing up their opinion and stuff. But when you're face to face and you're having a discussion with a real person, and you're not just speaking to be heard, but you're actually having a conversation and listening, you know, it's really hard to have that aggression and anger because you're a person and I'm a person and we do have hearts and we do care. And it's like, we may not agree at the end of the day. You know, it may come down to, we don't agree, but we can still have love for each other and in our hearts. And a lot of the time we'll both come away from it a better person if we'll just listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
There's some real knowledge out there.
You know, if we could just agree to disagree. I mean, I have so many friends on family members on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and their views are completely different than mine. Yeah. I have never wrote something derogatory or fighting with someone, I disagree with them, but I don't have to go out there and fight with somebody, you know? And that's what I don't understand, is why we have to be so cruel to each other, you know? And forgiveness is so important. Yes. Yeah, you either forgive or you relive. And yeah. I relived moments in my life so many times because I couldn't forgive someone.
Yeah.
And it's finally when I forgave them, man, I was a different person. It was like,
exactly.
You know, real quick, I don't know how much time you got, but I'll give you one quick, real fast story, okay?
Okay, sure.
A friend of mine borrowed $10,000 from me, okay? Never paid me back. Never saw him for years. And years later, I got a text from him saying, hey, this is your, I won't say his name, let's just say his name was John, okay? He said, hey, this is John, and just wanted to say hi. I'm really sorry about taking that money years ago, you know? And I was like, I was so happy to hear from this guy. Yeah. Not forget the money. It's just so happy to hear from this guy because he was such a close friend. I love this guy, you know? He was just a nice person. But whether he got screwed up on drugs or whatever happened, you know? Anyways, he goes and but his new thing is he's in the car business now and he introduces me to all these car dealerships who end up sponsoring me and paying for all the schools up and down the coast.
Oh, wow.
Now, I could have said, screw you, don't call me till you got my 10 grand. Yeah. Or I could have just said, man, I love you. I'm so glad to see you again. Never even mentioned nothing about the money. He hooks me up with these people. They pay for all our presentations for years up and down the coast of Florida. Put me in so many schools. That 10 grand probably became 200 grand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just incredible of what forgiveness did in my life without even realizing it, just because of wanting to forgive him and not want to hold a grudge on somebody or get so angry or whatever, because man, that bitterness, resentment, you lock yourself in this emotional prison. The only one that even cares is yourself. The people that often hurt us go on with their lives. They don't even think about it anymore.
Right. It just hurts you. And how are you, you know, whatever you fill your mind with, that's who you become, right? Yeah. You know, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Show me what you're listening to and what you're allowing into your mind, and that is who you'll become. And if it's hurt and anger and bitterness and unforgiveness, then that's what you become. But if it's love and joy and, you know, just building others, letting them know they matter and that we're stronger together, then that's what you become.
Yep. You know the line I often use, your friends are like elevators, they either take you up or they take you down. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. That actually is biblical. It came from 1 Corinthians 15:33. Don't be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. It's biblical. And I just can't use the verses in schools, but I use it in a different way.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right. That's tremendous.
So, Mark, where can we find info?
You know, my YouTube page is really good because you get to see a lot of the videos that we've, especially some of the videos that have gone viral. It's YouTube. It's The Mark Merrill. And Mark is with a C, MARCMERO. And then just type my name in any of the social media. You'll see me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, under Mark Merrill. You know, Eric, great talking to you guys. Man, God bless you.
Thanks for listening. Join us next time for another amazing episode of Living a Legacy.